The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Neil Tracy, very good morning.
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
All good. So the first point in the agenda of the Tide 5 this morning is surrounding Paul O'Connell and the Irish lineup. What changes, first of all, can you make as a forwards coach, and what are you expecting on that front?
Yeah, like, I suppose this Tide 5 is probably more of a, it's more of a kind of like five things I'm just kind of looking forward to seeing throughout the tournament. And the first one I went for kind of just basically is the fact that Paul O'Connell is here. And, you know, I'm just curious to see what changes, if any, has he been able to make over the, you know, over the course of basically a week or so. I imagine he was, you know, watching a lot of tape in the weeks previous, and maybe he was in touch with a couple of the more senior and key players to run through a few ideas before they actually met up in camp. But for the most part, he's only had a week with this pack. So I'm curious to see what changes, if any, could he be making. And, you know, he spoke yesterday and he said that obviously experience is really the main thing that improves the lineout and improves players' judgment of a lineout and their ability to come into a, to step into a lineout and basically to be able to read the situation, to be able to look at where the defense is setting up and lining up and knowing, you know, okay, this time, okay, we might have our call set, but you know what? We can change it. Let's go up a two rather than four because I just prefer the look of what's here in front of me. And I'm just going to be interested then to see the variety, the movement of the players. How often are they directly challenged as well? Because in the year or so previous in particular, I think the lineup was probably maybe slowly becoming an issue for a couple of years. But over the course of this season, and in particular the latter stages of the season, it seemed the teams were able to read Ireland incredibly easy and pick out, like, the amount of times that Irish players went up challenged in the lineup was actually startling. And I'm just going to be curious to see how often that happens this time around, because, you know, if it's not happening, essentially it's meaning that Ireland are kind of creating a lot more space and putting a bit more doubt in the opposition's minds and just kind of slowing them down a little bit, and they're not as easy to read. Do we see a few shorter options as well? Like, personally, I'm a fan of something that crept back into the game in the last couple of years is the kind of no lift line out where, you know, basically the teams are setting up and the hooker will just throw it into a player who's standing up. And I think if you do one or two, even just one of those in a game, it just creates a little bit of doubt and a little bit of variety. And it is sometimes, like, I'm well aware, it's an option that a lot of teams will go for when they're kind of struggling a little bit for confidence and winning their own ball. So on one hand, it's probably something you don't really want to be seeing. But on the other hand, it does just kind of put in a little bit of variety, and it probably keeps the opposition a little bit honest.
Is there a best situation, a best part of the pitch to be doing a no-lift line-out in, Neil?
Probably the closer to your own goal, the larger the risk is, basically, is the extent of it. Because, I don't know, like, it is a risky option at times, but I'm not really sure if there is a perfect place in the position to be going for it. It's just something to try out once again and just kind of keep the opposition honest.
Neil, when it comes to when it comes to those second row options that we have currently, are you thinking Tadhg Byrne's form has played him in beside James Ryan when that pack is picked later this week?
I don't know. Like, I really, really don't know on it. Personally speaking, I would say Tadhg Byrne is probably the most informed player in the country, based on what we've seen since October. And, like, you know, in my own personal opinion, I would like to see him starting in the second row with James Ryan. I think maybe they might go for another option in the second row. And now look, that there's an option in the back row as well to play Tadhg Byrne this week as well, because Caelan Doris is out. That means you're probably, like, more than likely you're pushing CJ Stander back to number eight. Like, the thinking coming up to this game was that we were going to see a back row of Stander at six, Doris at eight, and Peter O'Mahony at seven. If you're keeping Peter O'Mahony at seven, all of a sudden there's an opening there at six where you could play Tadhg Byrne and start another second row. Now, the problem with the back row is there are about 5 million different combinations you could go for, because the other thing that jumps out, which is just a natural, is put Peter O'Mahony back to six, or put in Will Connors or Josh van der Fleer at seven, or you could keep Peter O'Mahony at seven and play Reece Ruddock at six as well. So, like, luckily for Andy Farrell, he's not really short of options, as much of a blow as Caelan Dorris is going to be. And look, that's forgetting as well Ryan Baird and Gavin Coombs, who've come in as well. I'd love to see Tadhg Byrne given a run in the second row, but maybe for the game against England, when I think maybe you need a little bit more physicality, I wouldn't mind seeing him being put into the back row.
That's very interesting.
As a kind of a hybrid option almost.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And how he's utilized is going to say a lot about how they're approaching these games. Like, this brings us nicely on to the new blood here, because you've mentioned a couple of those players that you're really excited to see, Neil. And obviously the pack is where we're going to see the vast majority of these new players that you've outlined.
Yeah, and like, I know two of these were added yesterday, but we asked for new blood. We've got it. Like, there are four uncapped players in this Six Nations squad. I could be open to correction. I can't remember the last time there were that many uncapped players involved in a Six Nations squad or involved in the start of a campaign. It is more than likely we're going to see the Italy game being the debut game, like the breeding ground, barring any disastrous injuries. I think there's enough experience and enough players in form that, in all likelihood, maybe Gavin Coombs or even Ryan Baird might have to wait a little while before they're involved in making their debuts. And I think the unfortunate part is the likes of Tom O'Toole and maybe Baird as well, if it wasn't for the COVID-19 pandemic, the two of those guys would, I don't know, I'd say they'd probably be Irish internationals at this stage. They were both involved in the Six Nations squad this time last year, and it was like leading up to the Italy game, a lot of people were expecting they were going to be seeing some bit of game time. Unfortunately for them, that didn't arrive because it was postponed. And then by the time things rolled around in October and November, they were injured again and had to miss out on the squad, unfortunately, for Craig Casey. I spoke about Casey last week as well. I just love watching him. I just think he's absolutely brilliant. He's electric. He really, really lifts the pace. And I think I've seen him, I think you would have seen it with Munster, the pace he brings, particularly off the bench as well, when a game might be starting to get a bit disjointed on 60 minutes or so, is that it's reminiscent of when Albie Mathewson was coming onto the pitch for Munster a couple of years ago, just the energy he was bringing and just the delivery of service he has in the pass, and the speed of the pass is just absolutely outstanding. But look, we asked for new blood and we're getting it.
How much responsibility would you put on the shoulders of Paul O'Connell to ensure that some of these guys actually reach the next level, especially as we say that some of these are forwards? Like, obviously, the James Ryan progression into Ireland captain over the next couple of years is going to be interesting. But the likes of Ryan Baird, for example, how much can a coach take him under his wing, a coach like Paul O'Connell take him under his wing?
To be honest, I'm not really sure how much he can. Like, I think most of this kind of blood again is going to be done as it's going to be done at provincial level. You know, it's going to be done on a week to week basis, where he's in there, like Ryan Baird, for example, where he's got Leo Cullen for guidance. Leo Cullen was one of the best lineout operators in Ireland over the course of the last 30 years. So, you know, I don't think he needs to be looking too far away from Leinster to be getting that guidance and to be getting that, that mentorship as well. Likewise with someone like Gavin Coombs, you know, he's got brilliant coaches down there in Munster as well, like Van Gran and Graham Rowntree as well. And Tom O'Toole, like, he's got Dan McFarland, who is an absolutely outstanding prop there at Ulster. So the options that they have on a week-to-week basis, I don't really necessarily think that the Irish coaches have to be kind of carrying them on that little bit more and a little bit more, because, you know, they're only meeting up a handful of times a year.
Neil, when it comes to O'Toole, I was asking Andy Farrell about this last week. He says he's a lot of faith in him, and that's the reason he's picked him. He feels he can actually make an impression straight away. It's not a case of just getting experience into him. There is a possibility that he gets some game time during the Six Nations, given just the profile of the way the props have been picked. You know, Kilcoyne and Furlong are coming back from injuries. There is that kind of split between tight head and loose head, which is very much on the loose head side currently. Andrew Porter is going to be expected to play across both sides. There is that chance, depending on what happens, that O'Toole could find himself getting a bit of game time during this championship.
Yeah, and I think it's a massive show of faith in Andy Farrell that he has gone for Tom O'Toole here. When you consider, as you said, the injury profile Tadhg Furlong has had, like, you know, he hadn't played a game of rugby in 11 months by the time that Andy Farrell picked that squad. I know he got a run out for the Scarlets against the Scarlets last weekend, so it's probably an indicator he is going to get some bit of game time again this weekend, maybe with Porter starting and Furlong off the bench. But, you know, you could have forgiven Andy Farrell, I think, given the way that Furlong's situation was going, to pick someone like John Ryan or to pick someone like Finlay Beelam, who has that little bit more experience that he can kind of, he knows what he's getting and he can go back and rely on a little bit. But I think it clearly shows that he obviously rates Tom O'Toole. And I would say that's a massive confidence for the player as well at such a young age.
We do want to move on to a couple of the other teams involved in the Six Nations this year. But just finally on Ireland, Neil, what represents success for them in this year's Six Nations, in your view?
Success is probably 4 wins. So obviously one of those being France or England. An okay return is 3 wins and losing, as I think maybe a lot of people are expected, to France and England. And a poor Six Nations is losing to France and England and then losing to maybe one of Scotland and Wales on top of it. So it's probably, you're looking at 3 different outcomes there.
Let's talk about France. And do this new team have enough depth in the squad? This is something we want to get stuck into here because they've got injuries at the moment, Neil.
Yeah, and this is one thing I'm really looking forward to seeing over the next few weeks as well, because, you know, last year we saw new France, you know, this young team full of hot shots, and they were absolutely outstanding, and probably for a little bit of madness really in that game against Scotland, they probably would and should have won the tournament itself. Now, they had a load of injuries in the autumn, and we did get to see a taster of that depth that they have against England in the final of the Autumn Nations Cup. Now, granted, they lost it to England, but they were absolutely outstanding in that game. And in a lot of positions, we're down to almost third and fourth choice players. So I think that was a nice little indication that there is a bit of depth there. I'm just looking forward to seeing a little bit more in this tournament because they have some high-profile injuries. Virmi Vakatawa, Camille Schat is unavailable. Thomas Ramos, who I know wasn't involved too much last year, and Roman Entemac as well. So we did get a taste, and we saw some of those younger players, like Anthony Boutier, Matthew Jalabert as well, were quite impressive when they got to play. But one thing they do have this year as well is Antoine Dupont, who is just the most joyous rugby player to watch in the world at the moment. By a mile, most people would say now, the best scrum half in the world. And just the things he can do with the ball, he just seems to pop up everywhere. It's not just kind of his work as a kind of classic scrum half. He seems to be popping up on the wing. He seems to be popping up at fullback, stepping into the line, things like that. He just can do it all. And it looks as well like they're going to have, even looking at the forwards, Gregory Aldrich looks like he's available again after injuries. There was kind of fears he was going to miss the start of the tournament and maybe even the Ireland game, but he seems to have been past fit. 3 man of the matches during the tournament for France as well last term.
So this is the litmus test then for the French depth over the next few weeks. We obviously know that the headline stars in this team are just going to be absolutely amazing, are already amazing, as you say, Dupont, one of the best players in the world at the moment. But it's more a test of the names that we will be less familiar with this year when they start to get significant game time. Are they able to keep up that really high performance level?
Yeah, if France can really, really impress this year, and maybe winning it is... might look a little bit beyond them. They're away to England this year, so you'd probably just be favouring England to win the tournament itself. But if France pick up 4 wins this campaign, like you look at that and you look at like doing it without Vakatawa, doing it without Roman Entemac, Camille Chat as well, that's pretty ominous. That's pretty fearsome if they can do that this season.
I wonder as well, Neil, how much of the consideration comes into it for France that they are into year 2 of a cycle getting ready for a home World Cup too. That it might not be a bad thing for some of these guys to get blooded in during this tournament.
Oh, 100%. Now, France have never had an issue really, I suppose, with blooding players in. Their problem was that they were happy to blood in 5 players every week just because they had no idea what they were doing. Like the amount of halfback partnerships they would just churn through was hilarious, really. Even back in the years when they were really, really, when they were consistently challenging for Six Nations titles, there was always a dysfunction with them off the pitch that they could never settle on teams and particular half-back pairings. And it's probably something Galtier has had to deal with a lot in his first year, that despite the fact that things have been very settled. He has had to change the team a lot through no choice of his own, just down to the injuries and maybe suspensions along the way as well. But luckily for him, they're picking well and they're picking players, and everyone just seems to be buying into the right ethos.
And last week, Neil, Galtier was saying England should be considered the favourites to retain their title. Eddie Jones was saying France are probably favourites in many people's eyes. How do you see it between those, if we take it that they're actually the top two teams in the tournament?
I would still be leaning on the side of England as favourites for the tournament, basically just down to the fact that they have home advantage when the teams are going to be meeting later on in the competition at Twickenham. That is probably just about what's kind of leaning things over on the England side for me.
Right, point number four is Scotland. And to quote you here, Neil, can Scotland finally live up to their potential? That's four finallys, Neil. This has been going on for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think maybe I just copied and pasted that in from last year's Six Nations preview and from the year previous as well. But I always think Scotland are a team. Everyone wants to see them kick on and do well. Like, I remember Eddie O'Sullivan got tons of criticism in Scotland for the comments he made after Ireland beat them in the Autumn Nations Cup about how they always talk themselves up, and you know, they always tried to put themselves up on that pedestal alongside the bigger teams, and they always let you down. And like, he got tons of abuse for it, but ultimately he was right. Like, we've been waiting the guts of a decade now. It feels like every single year we're talking about Scotland. They have a handful of good individual players, and it's just about whether they can gel this together and they can put a couple of results together. But you know, they always seem to have an absolute howler of a game in their locker. And going back to it again this year, let's run through the really, really good players they have, because they have, you know, Finn Russell hasn't gone AWOL again this year. They've managed to keep hold of him. They allowed him to have his two or three beers in the team hotel, maybe. But like, I just think when you have Finn Russell in your team, literally anything is possible, because he is, he can just do anything. I don't even know how to even kind of sum him up. He is just such an entertaining player to watch. He's such an enjoyable player to watch. And he's a player that when he is on his game, he probably puts an enormous amount of confidence in all the players around him. And then around the rest of the pitch as well, Duane van der Merwe is someone who came in on the wing for them over the course of the last year as well. Jamie Ritchie, who's just signed a massive contract extension to stay in the country. He is playing the rugby of his life. And someone I'm looking forward to seeing as well, which kind of leads maybe on towards the next part, the final point in this side five, is I'm hoping we're going to see a little bit, and you know, I think we will see a bit of Cameron Redpath. He's the son of Brian Redpath, the former Scotland scrum half. English-born, and has declared for Scotland pretty much right on the eve of the tournament, right on the eve of the Calcutta Cup as well, which is coming up on the opening weekend. So that's sure to add a little bit of extra spice into things. He's a out half come centre, but will probably be playing centre for Scotland given Finn Russell's situation. And just looks like a really, really exciting player. I think he's only around 21 years of age. But he looks absolutely brilliant anytime, I suppose, the bits and highlights I've seen from him with Bath.
You think he could be a Lions bolter?
Who knows? Who knows? And as you say, that leads onto this final point that we have, where viewing everything in this Six Nations now is going to be viewed through this Lions prism. And I'm very much one of these people that, where possible, I do my best not to entertain any Lions conversation until the Six Nations in the year of the competition. I get so annoyed where you're like in the middle of a Rugby World Cup, which is like almost 2 years out from the Lions, and people are going, you know, trying to pick their various Lions teams, and you're just like, what is the point in that? It is so utterly pointless, because you don't even know it. Like, you don't even know if this guy's going to be playing professional rugby in 2 years' time. So pretty much I will be on hold with any Lions conversation up until the new year and we get into that Six Nations, because from there, like, the Six Nations in the year of the Lions absolutely makes or breaks people's chances. Look at Peter O'Mahony back in 2017. He was struggling to get into the Ireland team for large parts of that competition. And ultimately it was Jamie Heaslip picks up a back injury in the warm-up against England. And look, unfortunately for Heaslip, it was the back injury that ended his career. But Peter O'Mahony comes in at the last minute there, plays one of the games of his life. And that probably was the tipping point that slipped him over into the Lions team. And what, a couple of months later, he was captaining them in the first test. So it just shows the impact that a couple of big performances in the Six Nations can be. And we always love to try pick out the bolters. I was trying to look through things last night, and it's so tough to actually figure out what way to lean when you're talking bolters, because so much of it just comes down to like team selection on the opening weekend. Because if you have a young player in your head and in your mind and you think they might have a really, really good chance, if you see that they're not going to be given the run, or they might only get a couple of minutes here or there, it's probably tough to put the faith in them for a Lions. But look, there are quite a lot of good young players in there in the Six Nations who, if they can get the opportunities, can absolutely throw themselves in, because there are a lot of positions where maybe the backup slots are probably wide open. I'm just going to run through some names now. These could be absolute hit or miss, I think, some of these guys. But if you look at out half, outside of Owen Farrell and Finn Russell, there probably is another slot there up for grabs. I know George Ford will probably fancy it himself, but I think someone like Callum Sheedy with Wales could have a really, really good crack at putting his hand up if he can nail down the starting spot with Wales. Out half for Bristol, he's been absolutely fantastic. Another Bristol player as well. There's a couple in here as well. Max Malins for England. He's someone who, if he can nail down that fullback slot, I've seen him a few times playing for Saracens previously, and he's with Bristol at the moment. He looks really, really good. Other guys for England, Paolo Adogwu of Wasps. There is a bit of a hole in the English centre at the moment, and potentially he might be able to fill it. He kind of plays wing and centre for Wasps. He's got 5 tries in the Premiership this season, and he's looked really, really good, as has Jack Willis as well, another Wasps player, the flanker. A couple more for Wales to look out for. Louis Rees-Zammit, who is someone that I thought was going to have a big breakthrough year last year, but obviously the way the season probably was disjointed, it probably went against him. But he's got another good opportunity of really having a crack and making himself a Lions bolter. Another one from Wales, Thomas Williams. I know he's 26, so maybe bolter feels a little bit, probably not giving him enough credit by calling him a bolter. He'd probably fancy himself as being in contention in general. For Ireland, who are the Lions bolters? Potentially Hugo Keenan, maybe Ryan Baird, but like all of this, it just constantly depends on what way the team selections go early on, because, you know, Ryan Baird might play one game in this competition against Italy. He might, on the other hand, he might play 4 or 5. We just really don't know. We need to get an indication of what way the teams go. But I am just looking forward to, over the course of the next 6-7 weeks, pretty much every game, every major incident, every mistake, every unexpected win, you're looking at things through the Lions prism.
Yeah. No, it is. And now is the time. You're right. The World Cup is way too soon to be chatting about this, but it's also a decent mechanism for us to get over our every 4 years quarterfinal pain by just distracting ourselves with the Lions. It's going to be a great weekend, Neil. It's going to be a great competition. Thanks, Millie, for setting the tone for us this morning.
No problem, guys. Good morning.
Neil Tracy there with his Tide 5. We'll bring that back again next week to react to week 1 of the Six Nations.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.